Welcome to our podcast, where we delve into the fascinating world of the limbic system, the brain's emotional compass.
It's a topic I'm particularly excited about, you know. It's like the grand central station of our inner world, where emotions, memories, and even our sense of smell all intersect.
Exactly. I've always been intrigued by how this intricate network shapes our behavior and influences how we experience the world around us. It's incredible how such a small part of the brain plays such an oversized role in who we are.
Absolutely. I think what really hooks me is how much there still is to discover about it. We're only just beginning to scratch the surface of understanding its complex interactions.
That's so true. So what exactly is the limbic system? Well, it's not a single structure, but rather a collection of interconnected areas deep within the brain.
It's kind of nestled beneath the cerebrum, right? Like a hidden command center.
Precisely. And it includes structures like the amygdala, hippocampus, and hypothalamus, each with its own specialized function. But together, they orchestrate our emotional responses, influence memory formation, and play a crucial role in motivation and even addiction.
It's also fascinating how this system ties into our more primal instincts, like the fight-or-flight response.
Oh, absolutely. That's a key aspect we'll definitely be exploring. We'll also be discussing the limbic system's connection to long-term memory and how emotional experiences can create particularly vivid and lasting memories.
The famous flashbulb memories, right? Like where you were when you heard about a major historical event.
Exactly. And on the flip side, we'll also touch on how damage to the limbic system can lead to various cognitive and behavioral issues.
Conditions like Kluver-Bucy syndrome, which demonstrates just how essential this system is for normal functioning.
Right. And there's even some debate about the very definition of the limbic system and which structures should be included. Some researchers believe the term is outdated and overly simplistic.
It's constantly evolving, right? As our understanding of the brain grows, so too does our understanding of the limbic system.
Precisely. So join us as we unravel the mysteries of this incredible system, exploring its key components, their functions, and how they all work together to shape our emotional landscape.
Let's dive in.
So picking up on that last point about the limbic system's definition being debated, it really highlights how complex this area of the brain is, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, thinking about it as a clearly defined system, like a neat little package, is probably an oversimplification. It's more like, you know, a dynamic network with overlapping functions and connections that we're still trying to fully map out.
Right. And the fact that its functions are so intertwined with our primal instincts, like that fight or flight response, well, that adds another layer of complexity, I think.
Oh, absolutely. The way the limbic system mediates those split-second decisions, you know, whether to freeze, flee, or fight, it's incredible. It's like a built-in survival mechanism. It makes me wonder how much of our modern anxieties are rooted in these ancient pathways?
That's a fascinating question. It makes you think about how these seemingly primitive responses might manifest in today's world, right? Like, is road rage a warped version of the fight-or-flight response?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the surge of adrenaline, the heightened awareness, it's not so different from what our ancestors might have felt facing a predator. It's just the context that's changed.
Mm-hmm.
The predator is now a traffic jam.
I see. Interesting. And then there's the limbic system's role in memory formation. Those flashbulb memories are a powerful example of how emotions etch themselves into our brains.
Right. They're so vivid, so detailed, like snapshots of a moment in time. I still remember exactly where I was when I heard. Well, I won't bore you with the details. But it's like the emotional weight of the event seared the memory into my brain.
I get it. It's almost as if those emotionally charged moments are given priority in the memory-making process. It's as if the brain recognizes their significance and flags them as important.
And the flip side of that is how damage to this system can have such devastating consequences. Conditions like Kluver-Bucy, it's a stark reminder of how crucial the limbic system is for normal functioning.
It is. I mean, the symptoms, the changes in behavior, the emotional blunting, it really underscores how delicate this system is and how much we rely on its proper functioning.
Exactly. It's not just about emotions either. It's about how we interact with the world, how we form relationships, how we make decisions. It's all tied into this intricate network.
So we were talking about the intricacies of the limbic system and how its definition is still a bit fluid. But what really strikes me is how deeply it's connected to our emotional memories, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like our emotions are etched into our brains, sometimes so vividly, it's almost unsettling, like those flashbulb memories we talked about.
Exactly. I was thinking about that too. It's fascinating how an emotional experience can create such a strong, lasting memory. It's like the brain has a built-in highlighter for emotionally charged events.
And not just positive emotions either, right? Negative experiences, even traumatic ones, can leave an incredibly powerful imprint.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that brings up the darker side of this conditions like Kluver-Bucy syndrome, which, well, it's a pretty stark illustration of what happens when the limbic system isn't functioning properly. It really drives home how essential this system is.
It does. It's not just emotions either. It's our behavior, decision making, our relationships. It's all connected.
Yeah, I see. So thinking about how emotions impact memory. I was reading this fascinating research on how our recall can differ when we remember things individual versus collaboratively.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, apparently when we recall something individually, the emotional tone of the original experience tends to be preserved. Like if you had a really stressful experience taking a difficult exam, when you remember it later, you're likely to still feel some of that stress.
That makes sense. It's like reliving the experience almost.
Right. But interestingly, when that same event is recalled collaboratively, in a group setting, the emotional tone tends to become more neutral. The negativity fades, and people often focus more on the shared experience, even finding humor or positive aspects in something that was initially stressful. That is interesting. So the group dynamic kind of buffers the individual emotional response?
It seems that way, and the level of detail we recall also changes. Collaborative recall often leads to more specific details being remembered compared to individual recall, possibly because others can trigger memories you might have otherwise forgotten.
Oh, that's fascinating. It's like having multiple access points to the same memory file.
Exactly. And another point is that negative emotions can actually enhance detail recall. There's research showing that people experiencing negative emotions are more accurate at remembering details, almost as if their senses are heightened.
So it's like a survival mechanism almost, focusing on the details to avoid future threats.
Possibly, but on the flip side, conditions like depression can impair detail recall. People with depression tend to overgeneralize memories, losing the specifics.
It's almost like the opposite effect then. Instead of hyperfocus on details, there's a blurring of the specifics.
Right, and then there's the whole issue of how emotional stimuli are presented, whether it's thematic, like a narrative building suspense, or sudden, like a shock. Apparently, the type of presentation influences whether memory is enhanced or impaired.
So how does that work?
Well, thematic presentation can actually enhance memory for both central and peripheral details of an emotional event. It's like the emotional context provides a richer framework for encoding the entire
I
experience.
see. So the story helps solidify the memory?
Exactly. But with sudden emotional stimuli, the focus tends to narrow. Memory for the central emotional element might be enhanced, but memory for peripheral details might suffer. It's like a spotlight effect.
Got it. So the brain prioritizes the immediate threats over the surrounding context.
Precisely. And then there's the whole neurobiological aspect of this, the interplay between the amygdala and the hippocampus, which we've talked about a bit. It's really amazing how these structures work together to encode emotional memories.
So, we've been talking about how emotions intertwine with memory, and that, wow, there's so much to unpack here, isn't there?
Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. I mean, the way our emotional landscape shapes what we remember, how we remember it, it's almost like our memories are filtered through an emotional lens.
Right? I see. And it's not just about what we remember, but also the level of detail, the vividness, the cause of the emotional tone that gets attached to the memory, right?
Exactly. Like those flashbulb memories, so powerful, so distinct. But that also makes me think about how negative emotions, trauma even, can create equally vivid, sometimes intrusive memories.
Yeah. It's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? The same mechanisms that create these incredibly powerful positive memories can also be responsible for the persistence of traumatic ones.
Absolutely. And we touched on how conditions like depression can affect memory too. The overgeneralization, the loss of specifics, it's like the emotional fog obscures the details.
Right? Interesting. And then there's sleep. I was particularly struck by the research on how sleep consolidates emotional memories.
It's like our brains are working overtime while we're unconscious, sorting and prioritizing the emotional events of the day.
It is. I've often wondered about that, how a good night's sleep can make such a difference in how I process emotional experiences. It's almost like the brain needs that downtime to integrate everything.
I get it. And what about mood congruent memory?
The idea that we're more likely to remember things that match our current emotional state. It's almost like our emotions create a filter for our memories.
Yeah. It's like when you're feeling down, you're more likely to remember other negative experiences. It can become a bit of a vicious cycle, can it?
It can. It really highlights how intertwined our emotions and memories are and how they influence our perception of ourselves and the world around us.
It does. I mean, thinking about all this, it's a bit humbling, isn't it, to realize how much we don't yet fully understand about these complex processes.
It is. But it's also incredibly exciting. There's so much more to discover, so much more to learn. And that's what makes this field so fascinating.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. Thank you for joining us on this exploration of the fascinating interplay between emotion and memory. Until next time.